This is Second Look. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director. I'm glad to have your company on this crisp November day. Take a break from leaf collection duties, won't you, and stay with us for the next half hour as we go through WMRA's archive this week. We've got space for this week's edition of The Spark and Our Island Universe, too, plus a brief wrap-up of Virginia's election results from last Tuesday, the headline for which might be New Boss, Same as the Old Boss, as well as a report on how the tiny nation of Estonia is increasing turnout with online voting. But first, you've probably seen, maybe on a recent trip into your local convenience store for a candy bar, the newspaper with row upon row of mug shots. In central and western Virginia, that paper is called Crime Times, but there are variations on the theme all over the country. WMRA's Kara Lofton talked with Crime Times owner Brad McMurray and with one of the men who have appeared in the paper to discuss its controversial business model.
Here's how it works. When you're arrested in Harrisonburg, Charlottesville, Warren County, or anywhere in between, you have a mugshot taken. Every week, Crime Times USA requests those mugshots from the local sheriff's departments, as is their right per the Freedom of Information Act, also known as FOIA, and publishes them.
When I first saw a paper like that, I thought it was right on the line of you're crossing the line of somebody's privacy or not.
That was Brad McMurray, one of Crime Time's owners. McMurray's business partner is his father.
But it was the 2007 Open Records Act that codified what was in the public domain.
The sheriff's department has 5 days to complete the FOIA request. Some jurisdictions perform the service for free. Others charge. Fairfax, a jurisdiction the McMurrays are trying to break into, wants $2,500 a week for their services. The McMurrays are unwilling to pay more than $300.
It was just an entrepreneurial opportunity for us, and we knew that the other papers were going to be here, and, you know, why not us? So we basically just beat them to the market.
The paper is incredibly successful, selling about 17,000 copies a week at $1.25 a pop. Overhead is low. A new website provides extra income by allowing customers to buy electronic copies at $1.75 each. But what if you're one of the ones whose mugshots get published? To get it removed, you usually have to pay a $200 fee through an inquiry feature on the website called Mugshot-Related Questions. But most people don't request their mugshot be removed. The fee is too high. McMurray says public reaction to the paper varies from, if you don't want your picture in the paper, don't commit a crime, to others who view it as an invasion of privacy. One of the latter is Victoria Graf Cash, a licensed clinical social worker who runs counseling groups for local sex offenders.
Part of the thing that I think most people don't readily understand is that those are mugshots taken when someone has been arrested or charged. And many of those folks don't go on to be convicted. They don't go on to court many times. Charges may be dropped. They may be found not guilty. So people see the magazine and think conviction, think that this is what this person has done automatically. And that's unfair because you're innocent until proven guilty. But the magazine presents people in their worst light.
But McMurray says in publication,
there's no victim involved. It's just something that is embarrassing.
But then?
Some people have said that it's worse to be in the Crime Times than it used to go to jail.
Why is that?
Just because it's kind of like a modern, you know, stockade. Everybody sees it.
But for those in the paper, implications can reach far beyond shame.
One of the things you learn pretty quickly is that Crime Times is a thing that really sucks and really wrecks people's lives. Doesn't wreck mine at all, but a lot of people it's really uncomfortable for.
That was Jacob Lester. He was arrested in late 2011 for possession of child pornography. He appeared in one of this year's special issues. Cash explains.
I've had guys who are already off of probation, whose crime was 10 years ago, who have done absolutely nothing in those 10 years that have brought them again to the attention of authorities, yet their picture appears and their charge appears.
But even Cash admits,
there are men who will appear in that magazine who aren't doing well, who haven't gotten treatment, who haven't made attempts to live their life in a different, more productive fashion, and who haven't accepted the goal of no new victims.
And then there are others.
I've had guys who have been told not to eat at restaurants following that publication. One person had bad experiences at their bank. Had a guy whose business failed. People came and said, you know, you're a sex offender and we're not coming here anymore.
Which, she argues, makes it even more difficult for offenders to reintegrate themselves into society, as is the goal with the American legal system. So we are left with an interesting quandary. McMurray argues that if he and his father weren't publishing the paper, someone else would, because the market for his publication is so strong. For example, he said, Gotcha, a similar publication out of Richmond, received the award 2011 Virginia New Paper of the Year. But Crime Times?
We wanted to be different from all these other papers if we were going to do it. And all the other papers just make fun of everybody. Gotcha, their centerfold is, you know, they put them in classifications of like drunk tank, messed up hair.
McMurray doesn't claim Crime Times gives dignity to the people who appear in it. But, he says, it also doesn't attempt to make fun of them. Instead, simply publicizing the fact that someone was charged. For WMRA News, I'm Kara Lofton.
Let's do a quick roundup of election results for Virginia's state Senate from Tuesday. Republicans maintained control. No incumbents lost. Any seat that was held by a Republican will still be held by a Republican, and the same goes for Democrats. Nothing flipped. And as Mallory No Payne reports, that is despite lots of big money spent in the campaigns.
It's a fairly straightforward calculation. $45 million in campaigning plus low voter turnout equals zero change. Quentin Kidd is a political analyst at Christopher Newport University.
It just demonstrates that you can spend millions and millions and millions of dollars and not change the fundamental outcome of the way lines were drawn.
What Kidd means is that districts in Virginia are purposefully shaped so that they are clearly Republican or clearly Democratic. Anything but clearly competitive.
The primary lesson for me is we really do have a pretty gerrymandered state to the point that nothing is going to be easy to move going forward.
But that won't keep Democrats and Republicans from continuing to try. Virginia is a critical battleground state in national politics, so it's a prime spot to spend big party money, all in an effort to gain political momentum down the road. In Richmond, I'm Mallory Nopane.
If you look at the last 10 elections in non-presidential years, you'll find that voter turnout has been under 40%, sometimes way under 40%. That number could increase if Americans were allowed to do what Estonians have been doing for a decade, vote online. Sandy Hausman reports on how it works and how a country of 1.3 million people is pioneering all kinds of cyber services.
When a baby is born in Estonia, he or she is automatically issued an email address. This tiny country that sits between Russia and Finland considers internet access to be a human right, like clean water. And it's available pretty much anywhere.
If you are going to countryside to fish or hunt, there is always a reception available. So you can synchronize your emails, you can Facebook tweet, sign documents electronically.
That's Indrik Vimberg, who leads tours of a place called the E-Estonia Showroom. He says banks are quiet places in Estonia.
99% of bank transfers are performed electronically. As long as you don't need to have notaries, there's no need to go into physical place. Everything can be done through your mobile device or a laptop. We never had checks in our country.
Never?
Never.
And 95% of Estonians file their tax returns online, a process that takes just a few minutes because throughout the year, information about your earnings and deductions is automatically entered onto the return.
Most taxpayers in our country are getting a refund. And if you declare taxes electronically, the refund will take a couple of days.
You don't even need a quarter or a credit card to park. Your mobile phone's GPS knows where you've put your car, so open a special parking app, push start. Push stop when you leave, and the charge will appear on your phone bill. So it should come as no surprise that Estonia has been voting online for a decade. Again, tech specialist Indrik Vimberg.
It takes approximately 45 minutes to reach the polling station and back home. So when I do it electronically, it's less than a minute. I have to authenticate myself with electronic ID card or a mobile ID. And now it asks the PIN code. Then I will see political parties and the name of candidates. I will pick my favorite candidate, select, vote, and now I have to sign the ballot, so PIN code number 2 for the digital signature, and it's done.
Actually, more than half of Estonians still vote in person. Wimberg figures it's a tradition they value.
Mainly older generation. It's a Sunday, you put the suit on, the tie, you know, these sort of things, and the younger generation mainly use e-channels.
And the really crazy part is you can vote online as many times as you like over a two-week period. But only the most recent vote counts. Ballots are easily cast from abroad. This year, Estonian citizens living in 105 different countries were able to take part in the parliamentary elections. And turnout was 64%. Now, it might seem strange that a country once occupied by the Soviet Union, and before that by Nazi Germany, would feel secure enough to vote electronically. Wimberg says it's because the Estonian government is transparent when it comes to digital dealings.
For example, our government provides us a log file where I can see how my information is used. If some police officer or some doctor is accessing my details, I can see this, and basically I can sue them.
Which is more than you can say for your bank or phone company. In fact, Wimberg adds, there are 4 government agencies in this country of 1.3 million people that focus on cybersecurity. I'm Sandy Houseman.
I think roller derby is a hopeful thing.
He earned enough money from selling plants that he paid off the mortgage on his house.
People always want to know, is that a lie or is that the truth?
I completely disassembled this Triumph TR6.
I wish I could have been a professional woman soccer player.
I'm Martha Woodruff, and this is The Spark, an exploration of interesting people doing interesting things. A listener recently appended a note to her WMRA contribution asking for more stories about mules. Okay, then. Meet Diane Hypes. Diane and her 4 mules live completely off the grid in Hardy County, West Virginia. A life, I think you'll agree, that takes true grit. But true grit is evidently something Ms. Hypes was born with.
I was born in Iowa on a farm. I have 2 brothers, and actually I started riding horses when I was 5. My dad was the horse person. He was sort of the first horse whisperer I had ever met. My mother, on the other hand, she didn't really care about him. And when I wanted a pony, she said, no, you don't need a pony. And so I said, well, darn, I'll just go get a cow. So I got a cow, and I named her Betsy. And we went to all the farms, and there's not many people out there, so you just go. And I was only 5. And it embarrassed my mother so much that she told my father, she asked him on a Saturday whether he was going to go to a sale. And he said, yeah. She said, I want you to buy that girl a pony because I'm sick of seeing her ride that cow.
So I judge you were a child of some degree of stubbornness?
Oh, to say the least. Stubborn and adventuresome. Not afraid of anything.
I was born under a wandering star.
Diane Hypes is, like me, a person of a certain age and a journalist. She knocked around the world until 1981, when, tiring of city life, Diane bought 10 acres of Hardy County land.
I have a log cabin, and then later on I built some other buildings. But when I drilled my well, they had to drill down 600 feet deep, and it was very expensive. Well, I grew up in a family that if you couldn't afford to buy something, you didn't have the money, you didn't buy it. So I now had spent $10,000 on this well, and I had paid for my cabin, I paid for the land, and the next thing was the electricity. When I went to get the electricity, the company said, well, it's going to cost close to $9,000. So I couldn't afford that, so I decided, well, okay, I have to have water. But I didn't have to have electricity. So I got a generator and then just proceeded to live with, I got some propane lights because I had a propane stove. I heated my house with wood. And that went on for about 7 years. And then a couple more people moved in, and they weren't going to live without electricity. So they came and said they were going to put electricity in, and did I want it? And I said, well, 7 years ago I did, but now I had gotten used to it, and I really didn't want it. So now, 34 years later, I still live off the grid. And frankly, now I couldn't live on the grid because it's so noisy, and people who have electricity don't notice it. But I'm really conscious of the fans and the refrigerators that are very, very nosy. Propane refrigerators are very, very quiet.
Okay.
And so they don't...
You want your quiet.
Well, I've gotten so used to it, you know. The mules arrived about 5 years later, I guess. I had enough property where I could put in, you know, a barn, and they could have some pasture. So I...
And why mules?
Yeah. Wardensville happened to have a lot of mules around.
Were they working?
No, well, they were riding mules. A lot of people have them, and it's when I read more about mules, I really didn't know hardly anything about mules. And when I started reading about them, it made perfect sense because they're very good in rocks, and they're very sure-footed, they're very, very smart.
And Hardy County, as I remember it, doesn't have a lot of level
no.
to it.
Okay. No, if you flattened it out, it's probably be about as big as Texas, but... I'm kidding, but the National Forest is there, the Lee District of the National Forest, and it's very mountainous. And then if you keep saying, well, I want this, you know, I kept saying, oh, I want a mule, you know, pretty soon you'll have it. It's just, I don't know how that happens, but it does. So somebody said they knew where there was a mule, so I went to look at it, and I decided to buy her. She was three, and... It was a good thing I got that mule because mules are very, very different from each other. And she had a really benevolent kind of personality. I think she took one look at me and she said to herself, I think you're a pretty nice person, but you know absolutely nothing about mules, and I'm here to teach you. And she spent the next 20-some years doing that. Mules are always accused of being stubborn. And what I've discovered over 30 years is they are an S word, but it's not stubborn, it's smart. And they will not do anything that will hurt them or you. They're really strong. They're much stronger than horses. And their eyes are set different on their head so that they can see where all 4 feet are put. That's why they use them in the Grand Canyon on that narrow little trail.
Oh, that's why they're so sure-footed.
Mm-hmm. Horses, they can't see their back feet.
Yeah.
So they can't see where they set them. Mules can see where they set all 4 feet. As a matter of fact, one of the things mules love to do with, especially people they don't particularly like, they like to get on a real narrow trail and walk on the edge of it and hope it's really steep on the other side.
Oh, mule, you're kicking you. Oh, mule, I say, I ain't got time to kiss you now. My mules run away.
The worst thing you can have with mules is boredom. They don't have to stay anywhere they don't want to stay because they can jump out of it. They can figure a way through it. I had this one mule, Dante. He is a rope fanatic. And I had him all tied to a tree one time when waiting for the vet to come and give him their shots. And I went in the house. I tied him about 15 minutes before the vet was coming. And I go in the house and I go back out. I could not believe what I saw. He had untied himself. At that point, I had five there. He was working on the last one. He didn't just free himself. He freed everybody. There's a saying in the mule world, you can ask a horse to jump off of a high dive, it'll jump. You ask a mule to jump off a high dive, it'll say, you jump, I'll watch. They're not going to do all the time what you want them to do. And frankly, that's good because they know a hell of a lot more than you do. This was years ago. We were out in the National Forest with this friend of mine who was riding her quarter horse. And we come out of the forest. There's a, looks like a golf, little teeny round golf course. And so we have to cross that to get across to where the trail is. So I walk, I'm in front, I go up there, and Chelsea smells it, and she backs up, and that's telling me she's not going to go. I said, okay. I had my crop, I spank her a little bit. She goes up, and she smells it this time. This time she backs up really fast. I'm not going there. So my friend, who's riding her horse, she says, he'll go. So she takes him up there. He does go. He takes 4 steps, and he's into his neck with muck. I have 4 mules now, and if there's somebody that I really have a difficult time that I've met that I can't figure out where they're coming from, I have them meet the mules. and in about 10 minutes, they can tell me more about that person than I could if I sat down with them for 2 hours.
Now, how do they do this, please?
Body language.
The mule's body language.
Yeah. I've learned everything I know I've learned from them.
I'm Chanel Varani, and this is Our Island Universe. The dawn of the 20th century witnessed the discovery of the expanding universe. But by the end of it, the universe we discovered is weirder still. The universe is not only expanding, it is accelerating. What causes it? Dark energy. But that's just a clever way of saying we really don't have a clue. Moreover, this thing that we have no clue about makes up over two-thirds of the universe. Let's step back and see how we got into this mess. In the 1990s, astronomers observed a particular kind of supernova that serves as a standard candle in astronomy. We have a good idea of how intrinsically powerful they are, so by measuring how bright we see them across the universe, it tells us how far away they are. With this data, the expectation was that Hubble's law, that the further away a galaxy, the faster it's moving, would still apply. Nature had other ideas. Instead, these supernovae were further away than expected from a straight-line extrapolation of Hubble's law. The universe was accelerating in its expansion. The simplest explanation for dark energy is an energy associated with the vacuum of space. But this is an idea that needs to be tested. Circa 2015, all we really know is that the universe mostly consists of dark energy and dark matter. The stuff you, I, planets, and stars are made up of is only 4% of the universe. For the John C. Wells Planetarium, I'm Chanel Varani.
Support for WMRA's News and Information Fund, which makes our award-winning coverage possible, is provided by Bib and Dolly Frazier, Eugene Stoltzfus Architects, Joy Loving, Janet Trettner, an anonymous donor, and by a grant from a donor-advised fund of Harrisonburg and Rockingham County. But we could use your help, too. Find out more about how you can contribute to the News and Information Fund at WMRA, where you'll also find all of our stories from the newsroom. Be sure to like us on Facebook at WMRA Public Radio for a heads-up on our coverage. And follow me on Twitter at WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicki, WMRA's News Director and Morning Edition host. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday, and I'll talk to you in the morning.